Bottom of Pei Gimel Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. So the Mishnah said, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. So the Mishnah quoted the opinion of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. This was a whole complicated discussion in the Mishnah about if a husband writes a shtar where he basically forfeits his right to get peiros from his wife's property that she brings into a marriage. So Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said that he's not able to do that. He can't make a stipulation against that which it says in the Torah, and therefore his stipulation is invalid. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, halacha ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel velo mitame. The Gemara has a little bit of a cryptic statement that we paskin like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, meaning to say that if the husband writes this sort of stipulation, he doesn't really forfeit his right to his wife's peiros. However, we do not accept his logic. So the Gemara explains, my halacha ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel velo mitame. Ilema halacha ke Rashbag de Amar Emes Yirashena v'lav mitame de ilu Rashbag sover masna mashakasa b'torah tenau batel v'rav sover tenau kayam v'kasa sover yirush tabal derabana v'chachamim asuchizuk l'divrayam yoser mishal Torah. So this is the first suggestion in the Gemara. The first suggestion is as follows, that maybe we accept Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's psak that if one's wife dies, that he inherits her. However, we reject his logic. What's his logic? So Rav Shimon ben Gamliel believes that if a person stipulates against that which it says in the Torah, the stipulation is invalid. And Rav seems to disagree. Rav says, no, you can stipulate against that which it says in the Torah. And Rav also holds that the concept of Yerushas Habal, the notion that a husband inherits his late wife, that's only a din derabanan, and the Chachamim had to fortify their words more so than the words of the Torah. We find this principle in several places throughout Shas, where even if you believe that one can stipulate against that which it says in the Torah, which seems to, you know, possibly be Rav's position, but one could argue that maybe that doesn't work by din derabanan, because the Rabbanan wanted to bolster their din, to give it more teeth than a regular din de oraisa. So the Gemara rejects this. The Gemara says, v'savar Rav to no, kayam v'ha itmar ha'omer lachaveru amenas she'in lecha alay ona'a Rav amar yesh lo alav ona'a u'shmuel amar ein lo alav ona'a. So the Gemara says it cannot be that Rav is of the opinion that one who stipulates against that which it says in the Torah, that such a stipulation is valid. How do we know that? So this is a famous Gemara that appears in the beginning of Makos. It appears in Bava Metziah, where the Gemara has the following machlokas. Let's say I'm trying to sell you an item, and I say, I'm only going to sell you this item on the condition that the halachos of ona'a do not apply. Ona'a refers to the isser against overcharging. Again, there's a lot of details regarding this avera, you know, how much is, how much overcharge is going to void a sale. Without getting into all of the nitty-gritty details, the bottom line is that there's an isser in the Torah against overcharging someone when you're selling something. So the question basically is how you formulate this statement. So everybody agrees, let's say, for example, if you were to say that, I'm only selling you this item on the condition that there's no ona'a, she'ein bo alav ona'a. So the Gemara says in Makos and above Matiyah that everyone agrees that that for sure is not a valid statement, because you're essentially denying the halacha of ona'a, which is an explicit din in the Torah. But here, the person is saying, I don't want the halachas of ona'a to apply to this particular case, so that's a machlokas. Rav says that statement is still invalid, because you're still basically denying the din of ona'a, but Shmuel says that it's valid. So the question is, how can you argue that Rav holds that I can stipulate against that which it says in the Torah, if right here he says, if I try to stipulate when I'm selling you an item that the laws of ona'a should not apply to me, that Rav holds that statement is invalid? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela halacha ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel de Amar hamasna mashakasa batora teno batel v'lav mitamei de ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel sover mesa yirashena v'rav sover mesa lo yirashena hay mitamei v'lo kehilchasehu. So the Gemara then tries a different tack. The Gemara says, maybe what the Gemara meant was as follows, that when the Gemara said that we paskin like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, it meant that, in other words, we accept his premise that if a person tries to stipulate against that which says in the Torah, that such a stipulation is invalid. However, we reject his logic, because whereas Rabban Shimon Gamliel holds that a husband does inherit his late wife mida oraisa, Rav holds that that's not the case. The problem with this suggestion, says the Gemara, is really more of a textual problem, which is that this would be an example of the reverse of what the Gemara was trying to prove. The Gemara was trying to claim that we paskin like Rabban Shimon Gamliel, but we reject his logic. The thing is that if this formulation is correct, namely that we, in other words, that we accept his premise that if you stipulate against that which it says in the Torah, your stipulation is invalid, but the machlokas is about whether a husband inherits his wife, so that's actually the reverse. That's, we're accepting his logic, but we're rejecting his psak halacha. That's the exact opposite of what the Gemara was trying to say. So the Gemara says,
husband inherits the wife?
Say again?
I thought
So it's a machlokes whether the concept of Yerushas Habal is d'oraisa or d'rabban. And everyone agrees that there is such a concept. The question is it a din d'oraisa? That's the issue. Okay, so then the Gemara says, Ela halacha ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel d'amar emesa yiroshena. V'lav mitameh de'ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel savar bid'oraisa t'na'o batel ha bid'rabban t'na'o kayam. V'rav savar afilu bid'rabban t'na'o batel hay ketame yuche hilchesehu v'rav mosifu. Then the Gemara tries again. The Gemara says, maybe what the Gemara meant to say was, is that really we accept Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's psak that a husband inherits his wife, midoraisa. And we reject his logic because Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says that if a person tries to stipulate against that, which it says in the Torah, that his stipulation is invalid, that's only true by dinim de oraisa, but it's not true by dinim de rabbanan. But Rav thinks that that's even true by dinim de rabbanan. In other words, that if you stipulate against the din de rabbanan, then your stipulation is also invalid. So the Gemara says that's also not an accurate presentation of what the Gemara was saying, because the Gemara said that's an example where Rav accepts Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's halacha and his logic, but Rav is just taking it a step further. He's saying, not only do I agree with Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel by d'oraisa that your stipulation is invalid, I even agree by d'rabbanan. So that's also not an accurate portrayal of what the Gemara was trying to highlight. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela halacha ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel d'amar emesa yiroshana. The lav mitame de ilu Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel sever yerushas habal d'oraisa v'kol hamasna mashakase b'torah t'no batel v'rav sever yerushas habal d'rabbanan v'chachamim asu chizuk l'divrayim kishel Torah. Comes the Gemara, it says like this, that everyone agrees to Rabban Shimon Gamliel's psak that a husband inherits his wife. The machlokas, however, is what's the logic behind that? Because Rabban Shimon Gamliel, as we keep on pointing out, holds that the concept of yerushas habal, the notion that a husband inherits his late wife, that's a din d'oraisa, and therefore if you try to stipulate against that which it says in the Torah, your stipulation is invalid, whereas Rav is of the opinion that the concept of Yerushas Habal is only a din d'rabbanan. And as we pointed out in the Gemara earlier, the Chachamim wanted to give more teeth to their halachos. So in other words, even if you argue that Rav holds in general that a person is able to stipulate against that which it says in the Torah, he can distinguish when it comes to dinim d'rabbanan and say that you cannot stipulate against the din d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says basically the issue at hand here is whether the concept of Yerushas Habal is a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan. So the Gemara then asks, V'rav savar Yerushas Habal d'rabbanan, the Hasnan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, Hayorish es Ishto, Yachsu of Neim Ishpacha, the Inak Elohim and Adam. Now the Gemara, this is going to be part of a larger question, where the Gemara is basically asking, is it really true that Rav holds the concept of Yerush Sabal is only a din d'rabbanan? The Gemara quotes a Mishnah that appears in Meseches Bechoros, where the Mishnah quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka about the following. So let's say, again, a person's wife dies, and he inherits his wife's possessions. So the halacha is that in Yovel, that those possessions have to go back to the wife's family members. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. And then the Mishnah B'choros adds, but you also deduct the value of the item for the husband. So the Gemara says, well, so what does that mean? V'havina b'may kasavar. Ikasavar Yerusha bal doraisa amayachzir. V'idu rabbanan dami mayavitai. So in other words, make up your mind. If you think that the concept that a husband inherits his wife is a din doraisa, so why on earth is the property going back to the wife's relatives? It belongs to the husband after the wife dies. And if you think that the concept of Yerusha sabal is only a din d'rabbanan, and therefore the halachos of Yovel will override that din d'rabbanan, so then why does the husband have to be compensated for anything? The property should just go back to the wife's family. V'amarav la'olam kasavar. So the Gemara says like this. The case is as follows. When the wife was alive, she basically, or let's say in her will, after she dies, she bequeaths or she gives over in Yerusha her burial plot or a certain area of the Beis HaKvaros to her husband. And now the problem is that if the wife wants to get buried or her other family members want to get buried, it's going to be considered a pegam mishpacha. It's like almost like a slap in the face to the family to have her buried somewhere else. So Chazal insists that the husband basically give back the burial plot to the wife's family, but again, he's going to have to be compensated in that case. So the Gemara then says, The Gemara quotes a brayse of Maseches Bava Basra that says that if, let's say, a person sold his burial plot or the path that leads to his burial plot or the place near the cemetery where they used to stand and eulogize or the place where people would stand around and be menachim the avelim, so the family members can come and forcibly bury their dead in that plot because, again, it's considered a pegam on the mishpach. It's considered almost a slap in the face to the family. But the point of this whole discussion is that you see clearly from here that Rav holds that the concept of Yerush Sabal is a din d'oraisa, the notion that a husband inherits his wife is d'oraisa, which is against the Gemara's Gemara's previous contention. So the Gemara says, you're right, Rav Letameh de Rav Yochanan ben Brukah ka'amar ve'leilo svirle. This whole Gemara in Bechoros and Bava Batra was Rav talking within the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Brukah, meaning Rav himself holds that Yerush Sabal is only a din de Rabbana. This whole statement from the Gemara in Bechoros is only within the worldview of Rav Yochanan ben Brukah, who holds that Yerush Sabal is de Oraisa. Okay, says the Mishnah, Misha meis v'himiach isha uvalcho v'yorshin, v'haya lo pikadon o milva b'yad achirim, Rabbi Tarfon omer yinasnu lakoshal shebahen, Rabbi Akiva omer ein maracham in badin, elo yinasnu layorshin, shekulan tzrichen shua v'in hayorshin tzrichen shua. So comes the Mishnah with the following. Let's say a man dies, and he leaves over multiple creditors. Now, who are all these creditors? So one is his wife, because the wife is entitled to a ksuba, obviously. Let's say he has actual creditors, people that he borrowed money from that he hasn't paid up his debt to. And then, of course, he has yorshim, who are now going to inherit him. So all these people have claims on the late husband's or father's estate, but let's say there's not enough money to go around to pay up all the people who are entitled to the money. So the question is, who, and the Mishnah also adds, that let's say he has a pikadon, he has some sort of an item, or he has a milva, he has a loan that was in somebody else's possession at the time that he died. So the question is, which party is entitled to taking the money if there's not enough to go around to satisfy all the financial obligations? So Rabbi Tarfon says that you give it to the weakest party. Now we'll see in the Gemara that there's a little bit of machlokas what that means, but for right now, we'll just translate that to mean the person who's the most financially disadvantaged, the person who needs the money the most, they're the party that's entitled to the money. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, nope, that's not the way that court cases work. Rather, the yorshim, the inheritors, will always win out. Why is that? Because the halacha is, the Gemara tells us in several places, that let's say, for example, I borrow money from Reuven, and now Reuven died before I got a chance to collect my debt. So obviously, I'm allowed to go to his yorshim, go to his inheritors. I'm still owed the money. However, there's a din that if I want to be able to collect, there's a din to Rabbana that I have to take a shvua in order to collect from the yorshim. So the yorshim, by definition, will always have the upper hand because any party that's trying to collect from them are going to require a shvua, whereas the yorshim themselves do not. So according to Rabbi Akiva, in this type of scenario, the yorshim will always win out, whereas the other parties are going to be disadvantaged. According to Rabbi Akiva, again, the Gemara is going to explain all these opinions in a second. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Hiniach Perus.
Rabbi, yeah. In that case, where is he collecting from the estate? Or is he just trying to collect from the yorshim? The estate had no money. I mean,
the estate had limited funds. It only had enough to satisfy, let's say, one of these creditors, right?
Oh, so that's the estate had money.
There was money for, you know, to satisfy certain obligations, but not all of them. That's the issue here. Well, I mean, obviously, if there's no money, there's no money. Yeah, I'm saying there has to be enough money to satisfy something. That's the issue here. Okay, so then the Mishnah says, Hiniach Perus Telushin Min HaKarka, Kol HaKodem Bahen Zacha Bahen. So then the Mishnah says, if let's say the late husband or late father left fruit that was detached from the ground, so then it's basically first come, first serve. The first person to come and grab the fruit, they are Zocha on the fruit. Then the Mishnah says, Zach Sa Isha Yoser Miksubasa, Uvalchov Yoser Alchovo, Hamosar, Rabbi Tarfon Omer Yinasu LaKosha Shabahen, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ein Merachamin Badin, Ela Yinasu LaYorshin Shekulim Shrichin Shua, Vena Yorshin Shrichin Shua. Then the Mishnah has an almost identical machlokas. Let's say the wife or the Baal Chov went ahead and grabbed an item to satisfy their debt that was owed to them, but it happened to be that the item they grabbed was actually worth more than their debt. So let's say the woman was owed 200 zuz for her ksuba, and she grabbed an item that was worth 300 zuz. So now the question is, what do you do with the extra 100 zuz? So again, it's the same machlokas. Rabbi Tarfon says you give the extra money to the most, again, well, for now we'll say the most financially disadvantaged party, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, it always goes to the yorshim. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Lamali Lamisne Milva, Lamali Lamisne Pika. So the Mishnah, if you remember in the beginning, had two examples where it said that when after the husband or the father died, there was either a pikadon, right, some sort of a deposit, or a milva, a loan, that was in someone else's possession. So why did the Mishnah have to specify both of those cases? So the Gemara says, Tzricha, de'itana milva, b'haka amar Rabbi Tarfon, mishum de milva lahutza, nena, avo pikadon de'ise be'enayim amodele l'Rabbi Akiva, v'itana ha, b'haka amar Rabbi Akiva, avo b'hachim amodele Rabbi Tarfon, Tzricha. Basically, there's a reason to think that in each of those cases, milva and pikadon, there's reason to believe that Rabbi Tarfon would agree with Rabbi Akiva and vice versa. Namely, let's say in the case of a loan. So the purpose of a loan obviously is that the borrower is obviously going to spend the money. So one could have argued that in that scenario, perhaps Rabbi Tarfon would not say that the money should go to the most disadvantaged party, but rather he would concede with Rabbi Akiva that the yorshim would be entitled to it. Whereas by a pikadon, you could maybe argue the opposite, because by a pikadon, the item is still intact. Right? In other words, the expectation is when I deposit an item by you, if I give you a card to watch or whatever, the expectation is that you're not going to use it, or that you're not going to spend it or anything. It's just an item. So one could have theoretically argued that maybe there's room to distinguish between these two cases, and therefore the Mishnah has to specify both. Okay. Then the Gemara asks, "My lekoshel, Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina omer lekoshel shaberaya, Rabbi Yochanan omer lechsubas isha mishum china kesanai, Rabbi Binyamin omer lekoshel shaberaya v'hu kasher, Rabbi Elazar omer lechsubas isha mishum china." So again, now the Gemara finally starts to clarify that kind of vague terminology that we use in the Mishnah for Rabbi Tarfon. Again, Rabbi Tarfon uses this expression lekoshel shabahen, that the weakest one is the party who wins out. So the question is, what exactly does that mean? So it's a machlokas in the Gemara. So one opinion in the Gemara is that it means the one who has the weakest proof, the weakest raya. What does that mean? So the way that Rashi and the other Rishonim explain is that all of these parties who are coming to collect the wife or the balchov or the yorshim, they're all going to have certain shtaros that are dated at different points. So, for example, let's say the husband got married 20 years ago, and then he borrowed money 5 years later, and then he died 15 years later. So, obviously, the wife is going to have an earlier claim on any money because she already had her ksuba in hand, 20 years earlier. Which means that, in theory, let's say the husband sold off any property in the interim between the time he got married and before he borrowed that debt. So, those possessions that he sold, the wife can theoretically repossess. She can go over to the buyer and say, that land is mine, whereas the Baal cannot do that, because any land that was sold prior to the loan being administered or prior to him getting married, depending on the case, that party is not entitled to the land that was sold off prior to the obligation going into effect. So anyone who has a shtar that's predated, that's dated as on an earlier date, by definition is going to have an upper hand in terms of what they're able to collect. So according to this first explanation of Rabbi Tarfon, what he meant to say was that any person who has the latest dated shtar, they're the ones who are entitled to the money because they have the least opportunity to collect from other buyers who might have bought the land. The other opinion, the Gemara, is that the woman is always going to win out regardless of the date on her shtar. Why is that? So the Gemara says Mishum China. China is the idea that you want to find grace. You want the women to find grace in the eyes of the husband, meaning you want the women to feel financially secure. You want the women to know when they go into their marriage that in case the husband dies, that they're always able to collect. And you don't have this scenario where if there's a Baal Chov who comes out of left field, that he's able to somehow snatch the money away from her. So again, there's a Correct. We're not up to Rabbi Akiva yet. This is all still talking within Rabbi Tarfon. This whole machlokas is within Rabbi Tarfon's position, right? We're trying to figure out what did Rabbi Tarfon mean when he said that the most disadvantaged party is the one who wins out. We're going to get to Rabbi Akiva right now. Okay, so the Gemara then says, "Hiniach peros atzlushin for Rabbi Akiva, Ma'iria Moser kul hunami diorshin habu." So again, if you remember in the Mishnah, we basically presented this machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon twice, right? First, we had it in the original case where the parties come in and you have multiple parties but not enough funds to go around. So you had a machlokas: is it the most disadvantaged, or is it the yorshim? And then you had the same machlokas again when one of the parties seized an item, but the item was worth in excess of what they were owed. So you had that same machlokas: what do you do with the excess? So the question is, within Rabbi Akiva's worldview, Rabbi Akiva holds that everything always goes to the yorshim because they have the upper hand because of the shvua. So the question is, why did the Mishnah have to specify that the excess goes to the Yorshim? If the base amount is going to the Yorshim, then obviously the excess is also going to the Yorshim. Why does the Mishnah have to spell that out again according to Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara says, you're right, in a Chanami, the Aidi Dama Rabbi Tarfon Mosar, Tana Ihunami Mosar. It was just for textual purposes because the Mishnah wanted to spell out Rabbi Tarfon's position, so almost kind of Derech Agav, it also mentions Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, Tfisa La Mahanya Klau. So now the Gemara pushes back. Again, Rabbi Akiva was this big believer in the idea that the Yorshim always win out, which is obviously presupposing that no other party has any sort of stake in any of the possessions, right? The Baal Chov has nothing, and the wife has nothing. So the question is, what if the Baal Chov or the wife go ahead and grab that item, which, again, they're theoretically entitled to because they are owed money? So would Rabbi Akiva deny that act of grabbing the item is completely ineffective, that they now have to turn around and give the item back to the Yorshim? So Amar Rav, not... Yeah.
I had a question about Baal Chov. Mm-hmm. Is that metalculum?
Say again?
What is detached fruit?
Detached fruit is metalkalin, yeah. Yeah.
So a creditor, I thought it collects from property.
Well, no. There's a separate halacha that if, let's say, the that if let's say the debtor had land that he sold off to somebody else, and he has no money to pay you the debt that he owes, then in certain cases, if the land is meshubad, if it has a lien on it, if it's mortgaged, then you can go to the other party and collect the land. But in theory, a bal chov is able to collect from different types of possessions. Again, whatever the guy has on hand, he's able to collect from. In other words, anything that he has to satisfy the debt, he's going to have to pay up. These cases that we keep on talking about are cases where there are not enough funds to go around to satisfy all the financial obligations. That's the issue. That's why we're getting to this whole discussion. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Vahusha Tafas Mechayim. So comes the Gemara and says, the only time that Tfisa will work, that the notion that one of the parties can grab the item that they're entitled to is going to work, that's if the father or husband is still alive. So if, let's say, Reuven is still alive, and his Baal Chov or the wife or whatever, they're owed money, and they grab the item, so then even Rabbi Akiva agrees that that works. In that case, the Yorshim don't have a claim. But if they grab it once he's already dead, so then Rabbi Akiva holds that the Yorshim are always going to win out. So then the Gemara says, Rabbi Tarfon Deman Chehecha. So remember in the Mishnah we said that if the husband had detached fruit that were lying on the ground, so whoever grabs it first is going to win out. So the question is, according to Rabbi Tarfon, where exactly are these fruit located? So the Gemara is a machlokas. Ravu Shmuel Damri Travayu Vuhushet Tzivurinu Munachin Bereshos Haravim Abba Besimta Lo V'Rabbi Yochanan V'Reshakesh Damri Travayu Avilu Besimta. So there's a machlokas. According to Rav and Shmuel, the only time that this concept works, that I can just grab the fruit that's detached from the ground and acquire it if I'm owed that value, is assuming that they're in the Rishos Harabim. Because if they're in a Rishos Harabim, so then no one really has any sort of claim to it. You don't really, you know, have to make a kinyan on it. But if, let's say, the items are placed in what's called a simta, in some sort of an alleyway, a back alleyway, so then in that case, you need to actually make a formalized kinyan. You can't just grab the item and run. Whereas according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, no, even if it's in an alleyway, and if you're owed that amount of money, you're able to go and grab the fruit. Okay, and the Gemara says, Dun Dainiki Rabbi Tarfon, V'ahadri Reish Lakish Lo'uvdaminai. So there were some dayanim who followed Rabbi Tarfon's psak, namely that you give the money or the item to the most disadvantaged party, again, whatever that means, whether it's the creditor, whether it's the wife, but Reish Lakish made the Dayanim give the money back to the Yorshim, because again, the other opinion in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva, says that the Yorshim always win out. So Amar Li Rabbi Yochanan, Asisa Kishol Torah, Lema Bahaka Miflagei, Demar Savar Tabid Var Mishnah Choser, Umar Savar Tabid Var Mishnah Eino Choser. So Rabbi Yochanan was a little bit taken aback at the fact that Reish Lakish insisted that the Dayanim give the money back to the Yorshim, because he says, are you now making this case as if it's a case of a de'oraisa? There's a famous machlokas that appears in Sanhedrin about the following, what's called ta'abid var mishnah. Let's say you have dayanim who are adjudicating a case, and they come to a grossly incorrect psak, right? They forget an obvious halacha, an explicit mishnah. That's what we call ta'abid var mishnah. If dayanim forget, you know, an explicit mishnah that everyone agrees to, that no one disputes, and because of that incorrect psak causes one of the parties to lose their money, so so the Gemara has a whole machlokas in Sanhedrin. Is that grounds to make the dayanim, you know, pay back the party that was negatively affected? So one could argue that maybe the machlokas, the issue here, is whether we say that one who made a mistake on such an obvious case, do we now insist that they have to pay the money back? If the mistake that the dayanim maker is what's called shikol hadash means that there are different positions on both sides. It's just that we paskin like one, but it's not like a slam dunk that we paskin one way or another. So that case is different. That's called shikol hadash. But this tabid var mishnah, if you make a mistake in an explicit halakha, so the Gemara says, maybe that's the issue here. Maybe that's the machlokas. So the Gemara says, "Lo, to chule alma tabed var mishnah choser v'hacha b'hacha miflagei mar sever halacha k'rabbi Akiva mechaveiro v'lo merabo umar sever halacha afilu merabo." So now the Gemara says, "No, everyone agrees that if a dayan makes such an egregious error, that of course he has to return the money." The question here is this really called an egregious error? Because the question is, how do we paskin in this question, this machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon? Because one of the klali apsak that appears in the fourth parak of Maseches Eruvin is that we paskin like Rabbi Akiva over his colleague. But the question is, do we also pass like Rabbi Akiva when he argues on his Rabbeim? So that's machlokas. So if you think we pass like him even over his own Rabbeim, so then we do accept Rabbi Akiva's psak over Rabbi Tarfon. But if you think we only pass like him over his colleagues, but not over his Rabbeim, so then it's actually not so crazy. In fact, if anything, Reish Lakish would have been wrong then, because we actually should have passed like Rabbi Tarfon. That's one answer. The second answer is that everybody agrees we do not pass like Rabbi Akiva over his Rabbeim. The question is, was Rabbi Tarfon his Rebbe or not? Was Rabbi Tarfon his colleague, or was Rabbi Tarfon his Rebbe? The Ibai Yisem, a third answer, the Chuli Ala Chavero Hava, V'Hacha B'Hacha Miflagei, Mar Sever Halacha Itmar, Umar Sever Matin Itmar. And the third answer is that everybody agrees that Rabbi Tarfon was in fact his colleague and not his Rebbe. The Machlokas is, how seriously was this statement issued? Was this a real bona fide halacha that the Gemara was saying, that we really truly paskin like Rabbi Akiva? Or no, was it just Matin? Matin means that we're inclined to follow Rabbi Akiva. Yeshiva. But, you know, saying that we're inclined to something doesn't mean that it's an absolute 100% psak. So that's the issue. So those are the three possible interpretations at hand. Okay. Says the Gemara, Kravi de Reb Yochanan, Tathos Parah de Yasmi Misimta. Reb Yochanan's relatives, they seized a cow that belonged to Yesomim in an alleyway. Obviously, they were owed money from the father who had died. So they grabbed the Yesomim's cow from an alleyway. So Asu Lukame de Reb Yochanan, Amar Lehu Shapir Tfastu. They came to Reb Yochanan. He said, you did the right thing. You were owed the cow. You grabbed the cow. Again, Reb Yochanan, as we pointed out, the Gemara earlier holds it even from an alleyway, that's valid. So he says, you know, everything's fine. So Asu Lukame de Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Amar Lehu Zilu Ahadur. So they went to Reish Lakish. They said, no, you have to give the cow back to the Yesomim. So Asu Lukame de Reb Yochanan, Amar Lehu Maese, Shekenegdi Chalok Alai. What am I going to do? My counterpart, my colleague Reish Lakish disagrees. He holds like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore you're going to have to give the cow back. Hahu Bakrit.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I think it's the same thing in this case. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Hahu bakra diyasme de tafse Torah mini." There was a shepherd who was basically the guardian of these Yesomim, these Yesomim's sheep or cattle or oxen or whatever. So the Gemara says, "Balchov amar mechayim tafisna le uvakra amar liachar misa tafse." So there was a creditor who obviously was owed money from the late father, and he went ahead and grabbed one of the oxen and the Baal Chov claims that he grabbed it while the father was still alive, and therefore his tfisa was totally legitimate. And the shepherd says, no, you grabbed the ox after the father died, and you can't do that, because, again, we hold like Rabbi Akiva, that the oxen are going to belong to the Yisom, to the Orshim. So the Gemara says, Asu lekame de Rav Nachman amar le islach asade de tafsei. So Rav Nachman asked the Baal Chov, do you have Aiden that you grabbed the ox while the father was alive? Amar le live. He says, no, I don't have any Aiden to that effect. Amar le nigo de yachol lemimer lakuachu biyadi, yachol nami lemimer mechayim tafisna. So Rav Nachman invoked what's called amigo, right? Amigo is the idea that basically I could have said this easier claim, this lie, so believe me to say X, amigo, I could have said Y. In other words, I could have just said that I bought the ox myself. Let's say the guy said, yeah, I bought the ox from the father before he died. So if in other words, if that were true, then obviously the Yosom and the Yosham have no claim on it. He obviously owns it. So because he could have said that, believe me to say that I grabbed the ox while the father was alive because I'm entitled to it. So the Gemara then says, the Ha'amar Reish Lakish, Hagodros Ein Lahen Chazakas. So the Gemara is saying, hang on a second. Doesn't Reish Lakish tell us in Maseches Gittin and in Maseches Bava Basra that Godros, which are basically wandering animals like sheep and cattle and things like that, those types of animals do not have a chazakah. They don't have a presumptive status. In other words, normally, if you have an item in your possession, so, you know, we assume, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. If something's in your backyard, in your physical possession, the odds are you probably own it. That's the whole basis for the principle of Hamotzei Mechaver Al Varaya. In other words, if I want to prove that an item that you have is mine, I have to prove it. It's not that you have to prove that it's not yours. Obviously, the assumption, the baseline is that you own whatever's in your possession. So the Gemara says, however, that rule seems to break down when it comes to animals that are known to wander around. So in other words, if there's a sheep that's in your backyard, I don't have to assume that that's your sheep. The sheep could have just wandered in from somewhere else. So the fact that the Baal Chov had the animal in his possession is not a proof to anything. So the Gemara says, no. Shiny Torah de Mesira Leroa. So in other words, the Gemara says that an ox is different because it was given over to the shepherd. The shepherd was in charge of it, and therefore these particular animals, the assumption was is that if they were in your backyard, if they were in your possession, they really did in fact belong to you. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Devenasiya Tfos Amsa the Asma Misimta, a similar story. The house of the Nasi, they were owed money from this father who died, and after he died, they went ahead and they grabbed one of his maidservants, again from the Yesomim, and they grabbed her from an alleyway. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha, Yosef Rabbi Abba Gabayu, Amar Lehu, Shapir Tfistu. So all these Amoraim said, he did the right thing, because we hold like Rabbi Tarfon. So Amar Lehu Rabbi Abba, Mishum Devein Asiyan, Nenu Mach Nefisu Lehu, Vahadun Dainik Rabbi Tarfon, Vahadri Rishlok, Shum Deminayu. So Rabbi Abba said, no, you can't just flatter them because they're the house of the Nasi. We hold like Rabbi Akiva, as Reish Lakish already proved to us several times that he reversed all those Dayanim who took the money away from the Yesomim and made them give it back to the Yesomim. So clearly, possibly Rabbi Akiva, and you have no right to grab that maidservant from their possession. Okay. Says the Gemara, Yemar Bar Chashu, have a masik bezuze be'ahu gavra, shach...
Yeah. Why would they preclude it if the owner
can't snatch the
stuff?
I'm sorry. What was that, Billy? Say again?
Well, we know that Reish Lakish seems to disagree with the that they can snatch, whether it's the maidservant.
Right.
Why is that the case?
Well, because he holds like Rabbi Akiva that everything is going to go to the Yesomim, right? That's the default. So everything goes back to the Yesomim. So if that's true, so then if you're a different party, you're the creditor, you're the wife who's trying to collect the Ksuba, according to Rabbi Akiva, you have no claim on anything because everything by default is going to go to the Yesomim, right? Again,
no matter how much money the father was, no
No, again, presumably, no. So presumably the assumption is that, again, there are not enough funds to go around. If there were enough funds to go around, then yeah, then all the debts would be paid off. The case here is that, you know, there's only, the maidservant is only, you know, let's say the Yorshim are also entitled to their own money, right? Because they're also inheriting their father. So, you know, it's their claim against the Baal Chov's claim. So that's what you have to weigh here. Okay, so the Gemara says, Yemar Bar Chashu have a masik bezuze be'ahu gavra, shachiv v'shavik arva. So Yemar Bar Chashu was owed money by this guy. The guy died, and he left a boat. He left a boat in his possession. So Amar le'le shluchei zil tafsa nihala. So he told the shliach, go and grab the boat for me. So azal tafsa, so he goes to grab the boat. Pagu be rav papa v'rav huna b'rei d'rav Yehoshua. Amru le atofes l'malchot m'kom shachav li'acherim. V'amar rab yochanan atofes l'malchot m'kom shachav li'acherim lokana. So come rav papa and rav huna say to the shliach of Yemar Bar Chashu, you can't do that. That's a violation of a din that appears in the beginning of Maseches Bava Metziah that's called Hatofes the Balchov Mekom Shechav Liachirim. Let's say I appoint a shliach to grab an item for me. I'm a creditor. I'm owed money from this guy. It's totally legitimate. I'm not just stealing it. The problem is that this guy had multiple creditors and not enough money to pay up all of his debts. So the halacha is that, again, it's machlokas in the Gemara, but we paskin that if I appoint a shliach to grab money that I'm owed, so that is not going to be valid in this type of scenario. So the Gemara says, what happened? Tfasua inhu. So then Rav Papa and Rav grabbed the boat themselves. They were also creditors, apparently, but because they weren't because they weren't messengers, they were, you know, self-appointed. They were grabbing it on their own behalf. So that actually is going to be valid. Rav Papa mimlach maluche ravuna bereid rav Yehoshua mimtachla ba'ashla. So the Gemara says that Rav Papa was rowing the boat with oars, and Ravuna was pulling it by a rope. Mara marana kanina lalechula. Mara marana kanina lalechula. Each of them claimed that they fully acquired the boat. So paga behu Rav Pinchas barami amar lehu ravu shmul damei trevayvu shetzvuru munachin berishas arabim. But didn't Rav and Shmuel tell us back on the previous daf that you can only acquire something from the Yesomim if the item is in the Rishus HaRabim, and you're just grabbing a boat that's in the water? So Amar Lehu, no, ananami mechari fusa denara tafis. No, we grabbed it from the currents of the water, which have the status of a Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, Asu lekame derava Amar Lehu, kake chivrei, mishalchi glimi deinshe, hachi amar Rav Nachman v'husha tafsa mechayim. So then Rava turns around and calls them white geese. He says, you're stripping the Yesomim of their clothes, because he says that the halacha is you can only grab these items when they were actually still, if the father was still alive. Okay, and then we'll end off with this last story here. The Gemara says, Avimi berei de Rabbi Avahu havumaske bezuze bechozai. So Avimi sent, he owed money to the people of Bechozai. So the Gemara says, Shadrinu biad chama berei de Rabba baravo, azal parin. So he sends this guy chama as a shliach to go pay up his debt. So Amar lehu havu lishtara. So he says, so after chama pays up the debt, he says to the people of Bechozai, write up a shtar that says that he paid up your debt. So Amrulei, So the people of Bechozai turn around to Chama and they say, no, that debt, that money that you just paid us for that debt, that was for something else. That was for a different debt that he owed us. He said, Avim owed us money for some other reason, and the current debt is still unsatisfied. It's still not paid up. So Chama comes to Rabbi Avo and he says, do you have Aiden that you paid up the debt? Amar Lehi, he said, no, I don't. And he says, I don't have any Aiden. So Amar Lehi, Migo di Yecholim Lomar Lohayu Dvarim Ayolam Yecholim Nami Lamimar Sitchroin Ninu. So basically, Rabbi Avo said to Chama, you know, he basically said that you messed up. He said, because since, in other words, once you paid them the money, it's in their possession. Now they're going to have the upper hand, because now they're the mukhsak. They're the people who have the money in their possession, because they could have just as easily said, I never met you before. This money has been ours all along. So they're also believed to say that this money is just being used in compensation for a different debt that he actually owed. So then the Gemara says, Le'inyin shalume shaliach mai. So now the question is, does Chama have to pay Avimi back? Did he cause him a loss, or was Avimi not specific enough in how he wanted him to pay back the debt? So Amar Rav Ashi Chazinan, I Amar Lishkol Shtar of Havzuze Meshalim, Havzuze Lishkol Shtar Lo Meshalim. So first, the Gemara thinks that it depends on how Avimi formulated his shlichus. In other words, if he said to Chama, I want you to first procure an IOU, in other words, sorry, first procure a shtar that says that you paid the money and only then pay, and he failed to do that, so that's on Chama, that's on the shliach, that's going to be his problem. But if he didn't say that, if he said the reverse, he said first pay and then get the shtar, so then maybe that's Avimi's fault. However, the Gemara says Veloy, but that's not true. However, at the end of the day, the shliach is always going to be responsible, because Avimi can just say to him, listen, I appointed you as a shliach to, you know, for my financial advantage. I never wanted to lose money on the back of this, and therefore, no matter how he formulated it or didn't formulate it, it's going to be the shliach's fault, and he's going to have to compensate Avimi for the loss.